It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. In 2025, it felt like so many conversations at work, at home, online, eventually turned to talking about AI. I know.
ChatGPT is transforming the way we live and we work.
There's a growing debate about whether AI should have a place in the classroom.
AI is the key to reshaping American politics.
And the questions that we all still have, is this a bubble inflated by hype and speculative investments?
OpenAI has a valuation of $500 billion.
NVIDIA shares hitting another record high.
Or are we living through the opening seconds of a true transformation of our society? Are we heading towards AI with human-level intelligence that could change how we work, live, and learn?
I think there's a little bit of truth to both.
This is Alvin Wang Graylin.
I've been studying and building solutions in AI and immersive tech, cybersecurity, semiconductors for 35 years.
Alvin is a scholar, entrepreneur, and engineer. His book, Our Next Reality, examines the good and bad potential outcomes of what he says will eventually be a technological revolution.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're definitely at a very important fork in the road. The last 10 years has made AI an amazing technology, and it's about to really mature and get to the next phase.
And like many experts right now, Alvin says we can't talk about where AI is going without talking about the two big players in the field, the U.S. and China, and how their goals and values differ. Because in the short term, we may not see politics affect our tech.
In the sense of the technology, it's going to take a few years for it to really mature and to then filter into our lives and economy.
But over the next few years, global affairs will be crucial to getting the world we want with AI.
Because the direction that we take it and the policies we put behind it is going to affect the trajectory of our civilization for the next decades, if not centuries.
So today on the show, making sense of this moment in tech, the various directions that AI might go, how visions of artificial general intelligence, AI that's as smart as us, are shaping political strategies, and whether the AI arms race between China and the U.S. is about global dominance or more just a narrative being pushed by American tech entrepreneurs. We'll hear from a reporter who's covered the tech worlds of both Beijing and Silicon Valley, and from OpenAI's Sam Altman in conversation with TED's Chris Anderson. But first, we return to Alvin Wang Graylin, who has an unusual perspective on AI.
Yeah, my background, having worked in China, in the U.S., in Taiwan, really gives a perspective that might be a little bit different than what you normally hear.
That perspective has roots in his family history. Alvin was born in China during the Cultural Revolution, but his grandmother was American, a journalist.
My grandmother was a reporter for the New York Tribune back during the Sino-Japanese War, and she went to China in 1937 to report on what was happening and had to escape China in 1941 when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and she left my mom in China. And that's kind of how I came to be.
When Alvin was 9, the family moved to the U.S. They became naturalized a few years later.
So we are definitely proud Americans. And in fact, my brother was the first Chinese American to work on a U.S. nuclear submarine.
Meanwhile, Alvin went on to MIT. He got one master's degree in computer science, another in business, and ended up being a pioneer in developing the tech needed for AI today.
I helped IBM and Intel develop their early chips back in the late 80s and early 90s. In fact, I worked on a project for Intel back in 1993, and it was what became the technology that all GPUs are based on today.
The next year, he helped Intel open its first office in China.
And, you know, at that point, there was really no consumer PC market. And I essentially told the GM of China, I said, hey, I think we should try to build this market. And here's a 20-page plan of how we can do it. And he said, okay, well, go make that happen. And I was
bring PCs to China.
And at that time, you know, PCs were $2,000 or $3,000. And the average income in China was around $200 or $300 per year. So for that market to exist, we had to make a lot of changes.
Since then, Alvin has gone back and forth, working between Silicon Valley and China. But mostly today, he wants to talk about the impact of all this new tech and his ideas for getting heads of state aligned on what is a global situation. Because the way Alvin Graylin sees it, there are three possible paths for the future of AI. And being a total sci-fi nerd, Alvin has a movie reference for each one of these futures. First up, the dystopian thriller Elysium, starring Matt Damon, where the year is 2154. Most humans live on an overpopulated, disease-ridden planet Earth, while the uber-wealthy live on a luxury space station called Elysium.
The undocumented ships are approaching Elysium airspace.
Yeah, so the first future that is the most likely is you essentially have a few trillionaires and then you have the have-nots, and it is going to be ultra-stratified even more than we are today.
So the Elysium version is this sort of future where there's extreme social and economic inequality, and the wealthy techies sort of rule everything and the rest are kind of left behind.
Pretty much. And really with no upward mobility, right? I think in the past, what made America great was the American dream, that if you work hard, good things can happen. And the fact that right now our governments are essentially captured by the oligarchs and by the industry leaders, it is going to just make that even go more extreme as these technology becomes smarter and more capable.
The second path is even worse. It's what Alvin calls the Mad Max future, recalling the 1979 Australian dystopian action film with Mel Gibson.
In the not-too-distant future, there will be no civilization. There will be no heroes. There will only be madmen.
We right now have this AI race, technology race between U.S. and China to get to AGI. And, you know, that AI race gets to become an AI war, and then somehow it escalates into a kinetic war over maybe something related to Taiwan. And then, you know, goes out of control and becomes a nuclear war. Because the ultimate destination of that future is escalation into nuclear war and a post-apocalypse, and then taking essentially centuries to maybe regain the modernity that we have today.
What is path number three? It's got to be something better than those two, please.
Yes. The third future is actually what I call the Star Trek future. And it is something that essentially models after what happened with Star Trek. So in the Star Trek lore, essentially the Vulcans came to Earth. They were a rational, advanced species with, you know, advanced technologies.
Live long and prosper.
And they gave us these technologies, allow us to have a world of abundance. And then we started to, you know, discover the stars and pursue, you know, a self-actualization versus, you know, greed and hoarding.
I suspect our future is there waiting for us.
We became a world of plenty, and the technology enabled us. And so instead of relying on the kindness of an alien species, we actually now are creating AI, which is a rational, advanced technology that could bring us solutions to our problems. So it's actually a more liberating perspective, because we get to control when this technology comes. We get to control how we use it.
And so where are we now when it comes to which of these scenarios is most likely?
Unfortunately, right now, we're not necessarily looking at it with the right perspective, that this should be a public good that should be shared. It's seen as a weapon of domination or a tool for self, you know, gain or wealth. And those perspectives are going to lead us down a very dark path.
So from your perspective, they're not at all thinking about the public good. All these companies are just racing to beat each other to develop artificial general intelligence, AGI. These are machines with human-level intelligence.
Well, I think it's less about the AIs becoming sentient and doing things for itself. It's really more this race to AI. There's something called the strategic decisive advantage. It's an idea that whoever gets the AGI first will then use that power to self-improve and create what's called ASI, so artificial superintelligence. And when you get to ASI, then you have the power to dominate the world. Right. And that's unfortunately what right now a lot of people in DC thinks is winning, is that they think it's, getting to AGI first and then using it to, and in some people's words, send China back to the Stone Age. And that's very scary when that is the intent, not just to make yourself progress, but then to, hold other people back. And what I asked these people when they said this is like, so do you think they would just let you do that? And they go, well, no, they'll probably fight back. And I said, well, what happens when they fight back? Well, then we'll probably fight back some more. And then I said, what is that going to lead to? And he says, well, it means war, but war is inevitable. And when I hear things like this from people who are very influential in the decision making process in America, it feels a little bit ignorant and it feels very scary. And, I was in another conversation recently where there was senior people that said, we can't let, China cure cancer because that means we've lost. And, to have that type of a mentality that, curing cancer is something that only we can do, only America can do. And that anybody else doing good things for the world is seen as a bad thing. That is a very, I think, misguided view of the world.
In a minute, the plan that Alvin and other scientists are mapping out to veer us away from these dark paths and why he believes the AI arms race between China and the U.S. is a huge distraction.
If you listen to people like Peter Thiel, he says, the only way to be successful is to create a monopoly and then to control everything. But the reality is that we need to change our mindset to agree that the world is not zero sum and that actually we can all win together.
On the show today, who's really shaping the future of AI? I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Stay with us. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. Today on the show, we're asking, who is really shaping the future of AI? We were just talking to scholar, engineer, and entrepreneur Alvin Graylin. Alvin is an American technologist with roots in China, and for the last 35 years, he has been working in both places. And he believes it's a convenient strategy for American AI companies to say they need more data centers, more chips, and more money to beat China.
A lot of companies are using that same refrain because it works, right? It's what the military-industrial complex have been using for nearly a century in terms of creating fear within the government and then helping then get more lenient regulations, more government support, more contracts, and more support from the politicians. And it's framed as a national competition when the reality is, I think most of them realize that it is a competition right now between companies. And all of them are trying to figure out how can I create a moat for myself? How can I create an advantage where I get there first? I want to be the guy who's known for who invented AGI. Mm. And I want the fame and the glory and the monetary rewards associated with this. And in multiple interviews, you've heard people like Sam Altman say, hey, this is my responsibility to decide how this is going to be distributed. And to hear him say things like that, I feel, who gave him that right to be the person who decides this?
Well, I guess the argument is that it's a national security issue, that it starts by working with China to a certain extent, but always staying ahead.
The U.S. Model, and if you look at the America's AI Action Plan, which is what came out of the White House kind of middle of this year, it said we are going to race our way to the most advanced AI, and it's saying that, you know, by doing whatever we can to build the biggest data centers and, you know, powering them with whatever means possible. And then we are going to take that AI and spread it to our allies. And nobody's, you know, anybody who is going to be our friends has to use our stack, our chips, and our models. And that's how we win, by creating a dependency where, you know, everybody in the world depends on us, right? And that's, it's a very one-sided perspective in terms of what winning means and how to win. But if you look at how China is looking at the AI space, they have a very different approach.
Oh, interesting. Tell me.
There's actually something called the AI Plus Plan. And the AI Plus Plan is a 10-point plan to say, hey, how can we get AI into medicine? How can we get AI into manufacturing? How do we get AI into education? How do we get AI into agriculture, et cetera, et cetera? It's essentially saying, how do we deploy this technology so that we can make each of them more efficient, and seeing the benefits into our population and our economy, where it's really looking for spreading the benefits of the technology to the larger community.
But I feel like the story that, you know, we're hearing is, oh, the U.S. has to win at AI because this is not just a competition of a marketplace, but it's a competition between, you know, two ideas of what the world should be, either democratic or authoritarian.
Yeah. From a narrative perspective, it sounds really good. And, you know, America, democracy, liberty, you want us to win. But if you look at what's being, propagated in terms of what the Chinese model is, they 3 days after the U.S.-America AI Action Plan, the Chinese published something called the Global AI Governance Plan. And their idea was that, hey, you know, why don't we work together with the rest of the world to build an AI, advanced AI that then incorporates everybody's data. And so we now have a more capable AI that we share to the world, and we make it open source rather than making it a tool for any one country or any one company to be successful. So if you look right now, that the leading five open source models in the world are all made by AI labs, right? You would think if China wants to dominate the world, they would be saying, hey, I want to create these big data centers, and I'm going to make the big model, and I'm going to keep it to myself so that I can beat America and you know, beat democracy. And that's not what they're saying. They're saying, here's what I invented. And what you'll find right now is that universities and startups are using Chinese models for their research because it's open source, it's open license. You don't have to credit them for anything. You can use it commercially, you can use it for research, you could retrain on it. I mean, that to me doesn't sound like it's an evil plan to do bad things. It sounds like what America probably should also be doing as well.
I mean, we have to acknowledge that, obviously, the United States is not a perfect nation, hardly. But in China, there is regular surveillance of citizens. There have been questionable human rights approaches to certain minority groups. They tightly control information, speech, sometimes behavior. So why should we think that China's like, oh, we're going open source? What? We should all benefit from this.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, I am not saying that everything that the Chinese government does is perfect, and you know, they have definitely a lot of their own faults and issues, and you know, they're dealing with it with their own methods. But in terms of AI, and I've been studying this for, you know, 35 years, their approach from a technical perspective and from a innovation perspective actually makes a lot of sense. And the versions of these models that are available to their local population, you know, definitely has some level of internal censorship, you know, in terms of certain topics or certain facts. But the things that they are posting onto the downloadable sites for other people to download, those are unconstrained. And they're just the raw models. And you can then fine-tune it to whatever, you know, methods or perspectives that you have. So from that perspective, I feel like you know, even though you may not agree with everything in their politics, the way they're approaching AI is actually making sense from a global good perspective.
But by China going open source with its AI models, does it just look like they're taking the higher road with their tech, but actually this is a way of expanding their influence with all the other countries that want to catch up with AI, of integrating other research into their own models?
No, I think what you're saying actually is probably part of the intention of the government in terms of saying, how can we increase our soft power around the world, right? Just like America has used Hollywood over the last 100 years as a way of instilling American values and kind of ideals to the world.
So with all this in mind, how do we get on a better path? How do we avoid the Elysium and Mad Max futures that you described were possible earlier and get to something more fruitful? It doesn't even have to be utopian. Let's survive.
Yeah. If you listen to people like Peter Thiel, he says, you know, the only way to be successful is to create a monopoly and then to control everything. But the reality is that we need to change our mindset to agree that the world is not zero sum and that actually we can all win together. We get further, we use less resources, and we decide that, you know, the benefits that come from AI should be shared and is not seen as a weapon or as a tool for self-interest.
Yeah, so take us through, though. Help us envision what it could even look like.
So the first part is that we essentially need to pool our resources. Instead of building trillions of dollars of new data centers, we can actually take the trillions of dollars we've already put into data centers and just say, hey, let's link them together. Let's create federated networks that we can then train large models together and create what I call a CERN for AI. And actually, it's not a new idea. It's been talked about for probably 5-6 years now, of doing what we did for particle physics, or what we, you know, did for fusion reactors, you know, with ITER, or space science with the International Space Station, right? To have you know, essentially groups of countries or the world come together and invest in a large capital expenditure, but then to take whatever comes out of it to share with the world.
Is there a precedent for this? For like you mentioned, the space station and CERN, which was. It's the European Organization for Nuclear Research. This is, you know, a global coming together of scientists in a way that everyone agreed. But is that what you're looking at?
Yeah. If you look at the World Wide Web, actually, the concept of the World Wide Web came from CERN. And, you know, we also did this from another natural disaster that happened to us, which was the ozone layer degradation. And, you know, over the 80s and 90s, we essentially came together with the Montreal Protocol and said, hey, let's all decide to stop doing making CFCs. And now the ozone actually layer has started to, you know, come back and become much more healthy and normal for us, right? So we can work together. Countries can work together when we realize that it is for our collective good. And to make this CERN for AI possible, we also need to create something I call the global AI data pool, right? Or data cloud. Essentially taking everybody's language, their culture, their science, their history, and put it into one source so that we can train this AI to understand the world wholly, not to understand one single perspective.
Is there a conversation going on behind the scenes amongst scientists about how to actually do this? Because the creators of these companies are all about maximizing profits, and presumably they don't want to be a part of it.
Well, so actually there are these conversations, and it's people like Yashua Bengio or Demis Hassabis or Jeffrey Hinton, who are, you know, some of the godfathers of AI, who have seen this technology grow and have seen and understand the capabilities of these technologies, and they're advocating for a CERN for AI type model. But unfortunately, a lot of the politicians aren't listening. Right. I mean, we need to get past this politicization of this technology, and we need to see AI and the benefits that it provides as a public good. I mean, it sounds like idealistic utopia, but we are actually at a point where it's possible. You know, before we lived in a world of scarcity and we when hoarding and fighting made a difference. But if we are at the 1 yard line of getting to a place where we can have a technology that brings us abundance, we don't need to fight anymore. And we need to realize that and let that happen.
That was author and entrepreneur Alvin Graylin. His book is called Our Next Reality: How the AI-Powered Metaverse Will Reshape the World. You can watch his conversation with me on the TED stage at TED.com.